McCain was not explicit about exactly the changes he has in mind, but reinserting the Joint Chiefs into the acquisition process would alter one of the key tenets of the landmark Goldwater-Nichols Act of 1986. That legislation took acquisition authority away from the uniformed military and handed it entirely to senior civilian leaders in the Pentagon, leaving the chiefs in charge of developing requirements. In a hearing Wednesday, McCain told the current service chiefs that reform will be one of his committee's top priorities this year, and most of the changes he'll propose will take much more study.
I've come to one conclusion already, and that is, in the whole process, it requires your input in a much more meaningful fashion, and I think you would all agree with that. After all, if you're responsible, you should play a much greater role in the process. And that's one of the conclusions that I think that we're in agreement on and that we will probably try to add to the NDAA. But there's a lot more that needs to be done.
McCain and other senators spent much of the past year gathering input from acquisition experts to lay the groundwork for reform legislation. In a compendium of essays published in October, several of those experts did indeed advocate for a more robust role for the chiefs. Retired Admiral Gary Roughead, a former chief of naval operations, for example, suggested that the service chief should co-sign decisions about the systems their services are buying, and program managers should be accountable to them. Those steps, he said, would give the chiefs a stake in making trade-offs between costs and requirements. And David Oliver, a former CEO of EADS and DoD acquisition official in the Clinton administration, argued that stripping the chiefs of acquisition responsibility also took away their incentive to train and develop their services' acquisition workforces. At Wednesday's hearing, the current chiefs had no argument with McCain's suggestion that they should be more involved. General Ray Odierno is the Army Chief of Staff.
And the one thing that's been frustrating to me as the Chief of Staff for the Army is how little authority and responsibility that I have in the procurement process. I have a say in requirements to some extent, but I have very little say. Now, what I have to do is use my influence, use my influence as a four-star general and the Chief of Staff of the Army to try to influence the process. But frankly, I have no authority inside of that process outside of requirements. And so, you know, I think when you're in this position, you've been in serving for decades, you've been fought wars, you have some experience in what is needed and how we develop and procure items. And I'd like to see us in the uniform get a bit more involved. And I'd ask as we review this that we'd all take a look at that, sir.
Admiral Jonathan Greenert, the chief of naval operations, also expressed frustration with how little influence he, as the Navy's top officer, has over his services acquisition decisions.
I think we have too many. We need to clarify the chain of command. There are too many people involved in the process. If I say I need a thing, then it starts moving towards somebody building it, and there are a whole lot of people telling us, no, this is what you really need. And I'm talking about in the Pentagon. Just to get it out of the building. That's one. Two, we need to be able to compromise once we tell somebody to go build us something. If I say it has to be this fast, do this greatness, and I'm reaching hard, it can be quite expensive, and the technology just may not be there. We may need to de-scope this. It's too expensive. It won't deliver on time. Cost and schedule need to become a much bigger factor in this process than it is today. I think it ought to be a key performance parameter. That's big speak in the Pentagon means if you breach this, you got to go back and stop, take a pause, and look at this again.
The acquisition conversation happened in the context of a hearing McCain called to examine the consequences of sequestration if automatic budget cuts are allowed to stay in law for 2016. The chiefs repeated many of the same warnings they've been issuing for more than 3 years as sequestration has been turned on and off again. Each said they'd be unable to execute the current defense strategic guidance under the funding levels in current law, and that DoD will propose a budget next week that will breach the caps. But they also said a return to the caps the Budget Control Act prescribed would further exacerbate the training and readiness shortfalls that began when the caps were suddenly imposed for the first time in 2013. Odierno says at one point in 2013, 90% of the Army's brigade combat teams fell below acceptable readiness levels. A restoration of funding in 2014 and 15 brought readiness levels up to 33%, but the Army will still be recovering from those earlier cuts for several more years, even if it gets the budgets it's asking for.
But we'll be back, if sequestration begins in 16, we'll be headed right back down to those numbers again.
In the meantime, the Army is concentrating its training funds on a limited number of brigades, keeping them ready enough to deploy deployed to current missions.
So what we've had to do is we've had to develop a force. So we're saying, okay, we're going to take this amount of the Army, we're going to give you the money and train you to the highest level, which means the rest of the Army is training at a significantly lower level, which really concerns me. Because what I worry about is I got to have some level of the force capable of deploying no known contingency. But what that does is it means we're not funding the rest of the force, affects morale, affects capabilities, and it takes longer to recover from it.
The chiefs also expressed worry about the civilian workforce. While none of them explicitly predicted another round of furloughs in 2016, they say that employees with critical skills that can find jobs elsewhere are increasingly choosing to do just that. General Joe Dunford is the commandant of the Marine Corps.
From an aviation perspective, when we did furlough folks, we lost a lot of engineers and artisans. And right now, 50% of our F-18s are out of reporting. And we're having a very difficult time recovering from the loss of maintenance throughput capacity as a result of those furloughs. And also, importantly, because it was mentioned in most of our opening statements, when we talk about trust and we talk about retaining high-quality people, predictability is very important to people. And I fear that some of those folks that were furloughed won't come back because they do have other opportunities.
They also pointed to significant concerns with another round of sequestration's impact on more fragile parts of the defense industrial base. The Navy's Greenert says his service is already walking a fine line between the survival or failure of critical suppliers.
We're at the point where in our shipbuilding plan, we're at about, if you will, minimum sustaining. The good news is we are buying efficiently, but that all comes unraveled if you start dropping out ships here or there. And in aircraft and weapons, we are at minimum sustaining. So what happens is people think, well, the big primes are going to go under, and they say, that won't happen. That's not the concern. It's the kind of the mom and pop, the smaller or mid-business people that make very specific and refined equipment, nuclear. Over half of our nuclear industrial base is sole source, so we really, really need them. And so this lack of planning, the inability, it can't keep them open. You can't buy an economic order quantity, and it is a deep concern, and you can't bring it back fast.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.